This is Small Business Conversations on PBN, brought to you by Profits Plus Solutions. Increasing your profits plus building your business for the future. We are Profits Plus. You can find us at profitsplus.org. This is Small Business Conversations on PBN, the Profitable Business Network. Now, the host of Small Business Conversations, principal of Profits Plus Solutions, here is Tom Shea.
Good evening, everybody. This is Small Business Conversations for Thursday, April 16th of 2020. What's that comment? What a difference a month makes, or something to that. And that's exactly what we have with this situation tonight. Let's take details and then let's get into our guest, because we have a lot that we want to discuss with everyone. Tonight's Small Business Conversations is being recorded, plus website in two formats. An MP3 file if you want to download it, and also clicking, we can, as soon as Bruce Drew, our information stud, massages the necessaries, it'll be up on the website that you can take and listen there. Small Business Conversations is available on a whole bunch of podcast services. They include Anchor, Apple Podcast, Breaker, CastBox, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Podbean, Radio Public, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple CarPlay, Android Auto, Apple HomePod, and Google Home. With any of these services, if you subscribe to Small Business Conversations, it will send you a message to let you know when the newest episode is up there. That being said, we're here tonight to talk about the challenges that people are facing and our efforts to take and boil down what has to be an overwhelming amount of information that is being thrown at everybody. And we think that in doing it our way, we're going to get it down to something more relevant to you. When you start hearing some of the things that government has put out, and it's for mega corporations, I think all of us as small business owners have to ask, does that apply to me, or where does it apply to me? And our expert tonight is going to help us. Let's have his song right quick. And that's what we're here tonight to do. We are here to take care of business. Our favorite guest is back again. When we have challenging times like this, this is the expert we always want to talk to. Our first, a good friend. Absolutely, this is a good friend. Our guest's prior experience was that he was a retailer. And our guest also gets the credit for the methodology that we use to change the Small Business Conversations program about 10 years ago, I think, at this point. We were getting ready to do a program. We were going to talk about things dealing with accounting, and there was this phone call. And this person at the time said, "You don't know me, but I remember you. I used to hear you speak at a trade show in Las Vegas, and now I am a CPA, okay, Certified Public Accountant. And I see that this is going to be your topic tonight. Are you okay if I listen in on the program?" And my response was, "I have an idea. How about you come and be on the program? Would you be on the program with me? And let's do the program as a conversation. And let's talk about this, because there are things that I may think about items dealing with accounting, but you will know these things. And the fact that you have all this firsthand experience within the gives you a really, really unique perspective." So first of all, he's a friend. Secondly, he's a trusted advisor for me. And thirdly, he is a certified public accountant. My friend, Mike McCormick. You're right there, aren't you, Mike?
I'm here, Tom. How are you? Thanks for having me again.
I think I know how many times this has been that you've been on our show in the last 10 years.
I don't know. The 10-year thing kind of stumped me. it probably has been almost it's exactly been 10 years.
I'll have to go looking it up. To the point, when we recorded all these programs for the years, and we used to keep them on the website, and I go, well, what we're going to do is we're going to start the system all over with the first program, that first time we had a guest, and all the programs older than that, just threw them away, deleted the recordings. I mean, it's not like they were something great, like a Beach Boys original album or something. It's just, no, they needed to go away, and that's where we kept them, was when you came onto the program. And we're glad to have you, but I think it's about 7 times that you've been on the show. So it's almost an annual event. So tonight we have items.
I've been on once a year since we started.
Okay. So the reason why we keep having you back, you understand what all of us do, because you have been one of us for a long time of your life. So, and then now you have all this extra knowledge becoming a certified public accountant, becoming an advisor, a counselor, as such. You bring up a lot of perspectives that we can't find another guest.
Well, it's definitely a unique perspective. I get to work with clients from all different backgrounds, whether it's a sole proprietor or a 30-person distributing company, from various levels of revenue, and we have the advantage of being able to take our knowledge from one industry and apply it to another, and help clients of all different backgrounds and sizes, and it's really a great position to be in.
So Mike has, ever since this stuff started happening in March, Mike has had multiple webinars that I have participated in. They are also held in the evening. And one of the things that really impressed me was looking through the list of people who were on your program. Mike uses a service called WebJammer. Is that right? WebJammer?
Webinar Jam. It was a webinar program that came
Webinar
out
Jam.
About,
okay.
I don't know. Yeah, it came out about 6 years ago, and I bought a lifetime membership to it. And I've really just now started using it pretty extensively.
But when you've had these last couple that I've participated in, I've been impressed with the people who have been in your audience. I mean, there's some webinar tells people who they are, and you can look at them and go, oh my gosh, this person, and I thought, wow, look at all these other people who have a lot of expertise, and they're coming in and listening to Mike, which just confirms, yeah, Mike's the guy I want to talk to. Mike's the guy I want to have on hand to look at things with. So we want to look at several things tonight. I've got them into 4 categories. Number one is a most important decision to be made, a decision about going forward, and I'll share an example of that one. Number two, I want to talk about how to protect yourself as an individual. Being one of you, I feel my first loyalty is to you as an individual, and then secondly, responsibility to your business. But you have to take care of yourself first. Number three on my list is going to be, so what do we need to be changing about our business as this is going on? And number four, a little bit about how we market different. I'm struggling to understand the number of people who aren't changing things about their business, who just keep plodding along with stuff, thinking that we can do the same thing we've always done, and not so. So in our conversation tonight, here's my disclaimer. I am not an attorney. I have stacks and stacks of material that I have pulled from the Treasury Department, the SBA, the SBDC, U.S. Senate Committee on Small Business, from CPAs, items from CFP, Certified Financial Planners, items I've gotten from lawyers whose niche is employment, and a couple others in there somewhere. So I've been reading this, but don't take my word as to this is how it goes. I'm trying to understand what all is going on out there. I'm not a certified public accountant. Mike is. I'm not even an accountant of any kind. I'm not a certified financial planner. I'm not an insurance agent. My comments come strictly as just a small business owner speaking to another. Before you make any kind of decisions, you need to speak with the people who are your counselors and ask for them how they are seeing this information, because I'm also seeing conflicts of people with comments of what they're making. So let's do the first item. Item number one, I threw this in because on the Thursday in April, which would have been the second, I see a business. It's a ladies ready to wear. It's a very upscale, nice dress store. It's got 63 years of experience. And lo and behold, on Facebook, they announce, that's it. We're through. We quit. When we get to reopen again, we're going to start our going out of business sale. We'll clear it out and we're through. So my first thought is this a time for some people where they need to take and decide if they want to continue on the other side? My one comment will be with this particular business, I really don't see the advantage of announcing it right up front. You know, things might change. Like, what if three or four of her competitors announced that they were going to close? Might they stay? Perhaps this is just a person who says, I'm tired, I'm worn out, I just don't want to do this anymore. You know, it could be somewhere in those components. But here's my thoughts. Mike, come with me in this one. Selling a business right now is going to be kind of tough, because I think your buyer is going to be looking for a fire sale, something at a heavily discounted price. I think retailing right now is looked at upon as being something that is damaged.
Yeah, just about any business is going to have difficulty selling right at this moment, and fire sale prices would be an expectation on the buyer side. It certainly wouldn't appear to be in the seller side.
When you value your business, okay, and hopefully you're going to use someone who's an expert. Like our mutual friend, Troy Patton in Indianapolis, who's a CPA, but this is all that Troy does is business valuation. Most definitely, when you evaluate a business, I hardly suggest do not let a business broker tell you what your business should sell for. They've got a financial deal, and I don't believe that they can speak with total impartiality in this situation. But when you are evaluating the business, you sell with what's called goodwill or blue sky, and it's based upon the profit history of your business. Well, even though a person might look back for 3 years of your profit history, I think they're going to look at your, at this point, March, April, and perhaps March, April, May, however long this thing lasts, and go, wow, it's really falling apart. I think also if you look and say, well, I'm going to close the door, you've got a problem in that you're going to sell merchandise at a greatly reduced price. Okay, retail prices are going out the door. Fixtures and equipment are going to be sold for scrap. You're just not going to get a whole lot. Matter of fact, of all the people I've watched lately, that's the one group of people I have not seen coming out of the woodwork here and talking to retailers is, let me help you liquidate your store, or let's set up now for let me to liquidate. I haven't seen those going on. But Mike, your thoughts about a business and how you would evaluate it at this point.
Yeah, I agree with most of what you said. The other piece of that, though, I guess the offsetting side of it, is that any competitor who might be thinking of selling is facing the same challenges right now as you are. So it's not that their business would be worth more, valued higher than yours simply because of the stuff that's going on. Everybody's kind of in the same boat right now. I think in general, this would be an inopportune time to attempt to sell a business. unless there's other mitigating or not mitigating, but the extenuating circumstances where now it's got to be the time that you get out, you're probably going to be taking a discount, pretty heavy discount, on what you might otherwise realize on the sale of the business. If your business has been consistently growing over the years, and this is the only downturn or relatively only downturn that you've encountered, I think maybe sticking this out and hanging out for another year to weather this storm might be a more prudent course of action. Like you said, unless you absolutely needed to get out right now, and it's difficult for me to come up with a reason why that might be.
I will agree with you there. I got on, when was it? About 3 days ago, to be a part of what's called the Cloud Conference, and it's all kinds of bigwigs who are doing this virtual trade show. And I got a call, and I get to be the one gets to come and speak on behalf of traditional retail and small retail particularly. And the question being asked me says, well, you know, is small retail going to survive this? And I'm working on my notes of what I want to say, but the title of my topic is going to be something like, what's the similarity between a shark, a cockroach, and an independent retailer? And the answer is, you can't get rid of us. We're not going away. That's crazy talk to think that this is going to do it. Remember when 9/11 happened, for those of us who've got 20 plus years in business, 9/11 happened and 8 days later, New York City was playing baseball at Yankee Stadium. Okay. People will come back. I think people are going to come back with a vengeance for the idea like, man, I've been cooped up so long. I want to go shopping at this point. I want to get out. I want to go to a restaurant. I want to eat. I want to, you know, I want to go ride my bike, stuff like that.
Yeah. I think
boat
the,
out, all those
overall absolutely. I think that the overall economy was going well until this made it to the States. And I think that's when to come back. It may not jump right back in day one when they say it's all clear, but I think in the short term, the next 6 months or so, I think our economy still has a lot of gas in the tank, and it's still set to grow. I think one of the other things that's come out of this, Tom, is that we've realized that maybe some of these businesses should come back to being done here in the States, and maybe there's an opportunity for growth there, which will drive business to the smaller retailers.
I think you're going to see big retail. I see some of them are going to take this as an opportunity to make a lot of changes. I think you're going to see someone like Sears is going to become nothing more than a regional, small regional player. You know, they'll get down to double digit, if not low triple digits for stores left. You're going to see some with Macy's. I think you're going to see big boys take this as an opportunity to close up. Understand this statistic, everyone. In the United States, we have about 23 square feet of retail space for every single human living in the United States. If you look at Germany and England and France, they are 2 square foot per person, 3 square foot per person, and 4 square foot per person, and we're here north of 20. We've got too much space, way, way too much space. There's going to be some thinning here. These companies are going to take and not come back to work. When you see businesses like, Cheesecake Factory announced well into March, we're not paying anybody rent in April. Okay, you understand? Some of them are skating on some really thin ice. So let's thinking of people skating on thin ice. I want to make a suggestion for everyone to go up to our website, profitsplus.org, with this reminder, there's nothing up there for sale. You don't have to sign in to buy anything or use anything. All the calculators are free, but I'm going to suggest going up and looking at the calculator we call break-even analysis. You know, this is a good time to take, I mean, this exercise will take you 15 minutes. Put in the numbers and go, what's the number I have to achieve coming out of this to keep the doors open, to get the bills paid? I mean, we need to know what that number is so we go, it's a tool for us to help set goals and to help us make decisions as to what is going to be necessary coming back into business. Strongly suggest, look at that number, know that number, and then see what do I have to produce reasonably in revenue to make this thing become a positive number. That being said, to me, the most important thing that Mike and I can talk about tonight is you. So here's my first question, Mike. In situations, people have bought from vendors, loans from a bank, they got a lease, they may have some other lenders, the item called personal guarantee. You know, to me, at this point, as things are kind of rough, I would say to a small business owner, you ought to make a list of everything you've signed that you've given a personal guarantee. And know that in signing a personal guarantee, it may be hidden inside a big document. It's not boldly put it out there in front. It's kind of somewhere in the fine print. So, Mike, my question to you is, personal guarantees, whether you sign them individually or if you're married or if you sign them with a partner, how that plays, knowing what your responsibility is, knowing what do you do to get out from underneath a personal guarantee. And mind you, with all the things that Mike and I may speak about tonight, you know, the time to make a change is before you get in trouble. You can't go making changes on things once you're in trouble. People aren't going to be lenient on you at that point. So, Mike, if you would first, personal guarantees.
I would avoid them if at all possible. We're seeing that a lot right now with the differences in the types of loans that are available from the SBA. You know, the disaster loan requires a personal guarantee. The paycheck protection loan does not. When you sign a lease for your real estate, if you're a small business, generally they're going to require that the business sign, the LLC or the corporation, but also that the shareholders or members also sign as individuals. A client right now who's in negotiations, one partner wants to buy the other out. The partner getting out wants to be released from the personal guarantee on the lease, but the landlord is not going to allow that. So somehow in the contract between the two partners, they have to account for taking on, the buying partner has to take on the additional responsibility that the selling partner already has. So it creates a hiccup or a point of negotiation or a challenge for them to get over before they can move on. But I saw it in retail with the independent bicycle dealer that I was with. You know, the owners, regardless of how large the entity became, were always required by the vendors to sign a personal guarantee, which we fought tooth and nail to prevent. But sometimes we were successful, but in general, they ended up having to sign in order to get the product shipped. But in general, I would avoid a personal guarantee if you can.
And you know, also things like did you sign it as a couple, or did you sign it as an individual? Doesn't that come into play as to what is and what isn't going to be protected for you?
That may depend on which state you're in, but I would think the ones I've seen require the spouse to sign also, because having one spouse sign may not protect the vendor. The ones I've seen here in Ohio anyway have required both spouses to sign. But it may, like I said, it may depend on the state that you're doing business.
But if someone signed an agreement with somebody with a personal guarantee 2 or 3 years ago, and then that someone, like a friend named Mike, who got married in the last year, wife didn't sign a personal guarantee. And if vendor didn't come back and ask you for it.
That's right. Yeah, they wouldn't know anything about it necessarily. So it would be against my, in that case, if I had signed a personal guarantee, it would be against my personal assets. And again, depending on the state that you're in, there may be some protection for the spouse.
Okay. Also, thinking back to a previous guest that we had several years ago, Craig Melby, and Craig dealt with the issue of leases. And one of the points that that Craig had made was that when you're in business and you're going to renew a lease, that's a really good time in coming up with a new lease that says, hey, I've been a tenant of yours for 5 years, and I'm going to sign a new five-year lease, but the personal guarantee does not come with the new 5 years. You had it for five, you don't get it anymore. Or in some cases of a new business, signing a lease for the personal for 5 years and the personal guarantee is good for two.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's a great idea. And maybe they don't go. Maybe it's only on for the first 5 years, and it drops off as soon as it goes to month to month or something like that. But yeah, I would think that would be a negotiating point.
So let's see. Take a quick station break here. Our guest tonight, in this regularly scheduled but special edition, because this is a very different kind of program tonight. Our guest, Mike McCormick, our friend, our CPA. Mike is from Cincinnati, Ohio, and website to talk to Mike is financialclaritygroup.com. Like I said, they are in Cincinnati, Ohio. You write to him, Mike@financialclaritygroup.com. And let's see, I think I can remember this. Office number for Mike is 513-488-1121. Got that right?
Very good.
Okay. Quick station break.
This is PBN, the Profitable Business Network.
So the next point I want to tell people that this is a time to take a look at, not that it's going to strongly affect the change, but I think I'd want to look at it, and that is, what is the legal entity of your business? Now, if you go back on the profitsplus.org website and look at previous episodes of Small Business Conversations, you will see this was a topic all into itself one night, and our guest was Mike McCormick. And why did I pick Mike? Because Mike wrote a book. I so remember sitting on a beach on some cold January night, having dinner with Mike and his wife Kelly, my wife Marilyn, and Mike said, hold on, and he goes out to his car and comes back and brings me this little book that, while the book in color is somewhat gold, I will say the book is golden. It's an awesome read. It's the most frequently recommended book that I tell people about, and it's called Entrepreneur's Guide to Forming a Small Business Entity. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. Mike wrote it, and it deals with it. I think when all the world has taken a pause, you should take a moment. This book will take you 2 hours to read through it. It's extremely well written. It's very much so in words that all of us are going to understand. This is not an accountant's book. But I think this would be a time I'd take a moment and go, so what's my legal business entity looking forward? And this book is going to tell you, here's where you are responsible for things, where things can happen, and how do you protect yourself? I just think I'd be wanting to look at it right now. It's you know, it's like a situation when you have a neighbor who has a house fire or a car burns or a car wreck, and they make a comment about not their insurance not covering things. To me, that's a sign that a person, all the rest of us, ought to take and go look right quick and go, how have I done? What's mine set up? And I'm going to recommend that's the book to read. It makes so much sense. But I'd want all of you to be advised to look at doing that one. Anything you want to say in self-defense there, Mike?
Well, I appreciate the kind words, Tom. I actually have handed off the transcript for version 2 of that book to my daughter to make the edits on the Word document before we resubmit it for publication again. Rewrote it during several plane trips to the West, and updated it for the Tax Cut Jobs Act that President Trump passed or had signed for beginning January 2018. So there's a new version on its way, but might be a little while yet.
So this is what Jordan's doing when she's home from school, is that it?
That's part of it. She's still taking classes. They're doing web classes, those sorts of things. But when she has a free moment, she'll hopefully spend some time going through that, and we'd get it published or republished soon.
So next item on my list, protection of your personal assets if something goes really bad. I'm thinking 401ks, IRAs, your primary residence. Now, am I correct in thinking that what is protected will vary from state to state?
Absolutely. Yeah, each state's going to have its own rules as far as what is able to be attacked. Now, there's an exception there with employer plans, and that would be a 401k or a 403b. And even if your 401k is a 401k plan for your small company, it's still protected from creditors, whereas IRAs don't quite have the same level of protection. And whether or not your home is subject to or available for protection is definitely dependent on what state you're in.
Okay. But those are your three primary ones that your state may afford you a level of protection, that if someone were to sue you, if your business were to go under, these are the three main items that you need to go and talk to your advisors and going, are these things sheltered?
Right. These are the places where you have the bulk of your wealth. And you want to protect them as best you can. You want to talk to somebody about entity structure, retirement plan design, and asset protection, which might fall under the guise of an estate planner, an estate planning attorney, possibly.
Okay. So in the case of, and without getting, before we go over to the sideline of the all the alphabet soup things that we've gotten from government in the last month. What about suggesting to a person that if they've got a substantial amount of equity in their home, first making sure that the home is protected so that somebody can't go get that. And, you know, before you, again, as I understand it, these are things you've got to do before you ever get into trouble. You can't get into trouble and then go moving money around. Am I correct? That's kind of frowned on?
Yeah. Once the lawsuit's been filed or once you've received notice of it, at least, it's really too late to do anything or it's going to be much more challenging to do so. The right time to do it is now before anybody is attempting to catch up with you. The same is true with your business entity. You can't switch easily to a corporate structure. It needs something to be something you plan for and filed particular documents with your Secretary of State and had the right documents set up ahead of time. It's just not something that you can do once the court comes calling or creditor comes calling or whatever it might be.
So that value that's in your home, two things. Number one is pretend that somehow or another you couldn't qualify for anything that are in these SBA loans that are coming up. Do you need that money to be in your business? And if you're in good standing with your home lender, as I remember it, this was something back in about 2007, 2008 that Ford Motor Company did. You know, all three car companies had all kinds of issues. Ford went out and mortgaged everything they owned and was sitting on this big pile of cash because they mortgaged to the hilt, so to speak. They had all this cash there necessary to take and keep them afloat as a business. You know, if the other ones that Mike's going to talk about did not come through, this would be things to as a place to look at it. But also, if your home were not protected from creditors and they could get it, Mike, can we cross that bridge in a discussion tonight? If your home were not protected and you had a lot of equity in the home, what could you do with that money? I mean, how could you, in essence, put it someplace else so that it couldn't be gotten?
Well, if you have a lot of equity in your home and it's not, if you don't have a line of credit available already to possibly leverage against that equity, getting a loan now may be challenging, may or may not, depending on if you have other assets. Obviously, the bank's going to be more cautious right now in lending in general. But if you have a line of credit on the house that maybe has zero balance on it now, maybe you could possibly leverage that and use those proceeds in your business. You could, the government has, if you want to talk about retirement plans at such time, right? The government has relaxed the rules on loans from 401k plans where you can, it used to be 50% of the vested plan balance or $50,000, whichever is less. Now it's up to $100,000. You could potentially take money out of an IRA and use that in your business. And I think it's a 3-year payback window now without paying tax or penalty on it. So they've really loosened up some of those requirements on accessing retirement plan money for people affected by the COVID virus. And that means pretty much everybody.
Now, as Mike said, that one of the things you have to look at, oh, they've relaxed it for 3 years. And any of these things where you have the opportunity that we'll talk about during the program here to pay something later, okay, as they say, that cow's coming home at some point in time. You say, oh, I can delay this for 3 years. 3 years is going to come 36 months, and that's going to be expected.
Yeah.
And if you have borrowed money from this IRA, as Mike said, and you don't pay it back. Okay, Mike, what happens if you don't pay it back in 3 years? How much money is that going to be?
Yeah, well, obviously it will be taxable income. And if you're under 59 and a half, there might be a penalty. These aren't, I wouldn't say going to your retirement plan is the course of first resolve to go there first. You want to access a bank loan or take advantage of the government programs that have become available, and my guess is there's going to be more coming down pretty soon. Before you go to the retirement plan, that would be something that retirement plan assets are retirement plan assets. We don't want to tap into those unless it's the last resort. But as Tom said, when the word deferral is put on a bill, whether that's paying back a loan or delaying remitting your payroll taxes or delaying making your health insurance premiums for you and your staff, those bills still need to be paid. And, if you can keep up with them, I strongly recommend you do that rather than wait 3 months and have to come up with 3 months worth of premiums for an insurance bill. And in Ohio, the Workers' Comp Commission has allowed a deferral of the premiums that are coming due. And I've told clients, keep paying them monthly if you can, because it's a lot easier to eat the elephant in bites rather than all at once.
So as we're looking at items that can happen, I'm thinking about one such as a working with a mortgage, a loan holder, or even a landlord. Make sure you're clear on what it is that they're going to do to help you. Or thinking first of landlords. In the Southeast United States, Publix, which owns a lot of shopping centers, has went across the board and told the tenants, hey, we are waiving rent. Now, understand, waiving is not the same as delaying. When someone's going to talk about what they're going to do to help you, make sure you get the difference of waiving and delaying. Am I right on this one, Mike?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, waiving.
It means it goes away.
Waiving means forgiven, it goes away. Deferred, delayed, those all mean that it's still owed. You will pay it.
So, make sure that we're looking at that. Mike, one other one before we go over to the loan side. As I have read this, let me see if I've got this right. You clarify for me. If your business reports a loss on its tax return for 2018, if you have filed 2019, and it's even proactive into 2020, but if your business operation has a loss in any of those 3 years, you get to go back against the years 2013 through 2017, that's 5 years, and if you have taken and had a profit in any of those 5 years, the loss in these 3 years goes against them. So in essence, you can file an amendment, if I've got this right, and you can get a tax refund?
Yeah, if you, let's say you're profitable in the previous years, and then you had an NOL in 2018, normally that
would
be carried forward to
19. Wait a minute. Give NOL, non-accounting terms.
NOL is a net operating loss. It means your bit for tax purposes, possibly for book purposes as well, the expenses exceeded the revenue. So you reported a negative amount of income on your tax return, your business tax return. Normally, you would carry that loss forward to the subsequent year to offset income in that year. So under normal circumstances, the 2018 loss would be carried forward to 19 and reduce the income that gets reported for 19. What Congress has done is given us a five-year carryback. So you can take that 2018 loss and carry it back 5 years and file an amended tax return or potentially what's called a 1045, which is a quick way to get a refund for an NOL carryback to offset taxes on previous year profits. So it might be you use that loss now, carry it back, and get a refund of tax dollars that you had already paid to Uncle Sam, thereby getting a refund that you can use now.
So would that be if my business has not, if I haven't filed my 2019 returns and I'm expecting that it's going to be a loss, does it make sense to say, let's hurry up, file 2019, see the loss, apply it against the years past, and file that 1045 form as you've claimed, and get the refund?
Potentially, yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. And if you have made a profit. Yeah?
No, go ahead.
So if you've made a profit in these years of 2018 and 2019, if you've lost in 2018 and 2019, but you made a profit in 13 through 17, okay, you're not out of luck. It carries forward with no definite time frame as to how many years forward it's going to carry. You know, Joe, you're going to get the credit to go forward. So if 2020 winds up being a profitable year, 2021, you can take these losses of 2018 and 2019 and apply them against what's going to be a profit in future years.
Correct. Yeah, you're going to carry it back 5 years first. Use the loss to offset any income that you reported in the prior 5 years, and any loss that exceeds those prior five-year profits will be carried forward to the next year, 2020, 2021, whatever, until it's used up.
Okay, so now let's take and get into the alphabet soup stuff. PPP, IDL, SBA. Let's I think start with the one that people seem to hear about the most. It's the $10,000, whatever people call it, gift, grant. Give us that one, please, sir.
So the EIDL, or Economic Impact Disaster Loan, has a provision in it that allows for a rapid, I'll call it a rapid release of $10,000 that's supposed to be made available pretty quickly after applying for the loan. It doesn't mean you've been applied for the full amount you've requested, and it doesn't mean that you've accepted the full amount you've requested, but $10,000 is supposed to be made available rather quickly. The confusion or the changes that we've seen come about in the hearsay about this is it's still swirling, and I haven't fully nailed it down yet, but it was touted to be a $10,000 grant immediately available. Then we've heard more recently that it's based on the number of employees that you have, and it's $1,000 per employee up to 10 to get to the $10,000. So that part of it is still kind of in flux.
Okay, let me ask you this question about it. I know of several people, folks I talk to on a regular basis, who had applied for that. The old one applied on Monday, the 3rd of March, applied for that loan during that week. That would have been March 30th up to April 3rd. I have not heard of one business owner getting any of the money yet.
Yeah, that's Tom. I have just recently started hearing of a couple people getting funded. None of my clients that I know of have received any money yet. It's really, really disappointing to hear the hubbub from the media and the SBA and the bankers and everybody that it's taken this long to actually get some money into small businesses' hands.
Wasn't this promoted as 2 to 3 days max? You'll have $10,000, no questions asked.
Yep, that's what I'm saying. The $10,000 was a rapid, supposed to be some sort of rapid release type of money, but unfortunately, I haven't heard of anybody actually getting any money yet.
Okay. So you start with, you can go online, if I understand this correct, you go online and you fill out this EIDL loan. It's a $10,000 advance. Supposedly comes quick. And you get it irregardless of you applying for the, shall we say, the second half or the second part of the EIDL loan.
Well,
is that
I
what
think
we're
it's
thinking
all
this is?
No, I think it's part of the bigger loan. So the EIDL is a more significant SBA loan. In other words, it requires full documentation, personal guarantee, a security interest in your assets. It's a 10-year note, I believe, on the EIDL, 3.5% interest, I think. But it's a full document loan, and you're going to need to provide all that documentation at some point in the process. Now, my understanding is that the $10,000 was supposed to be released prior to all the documentation being submitted. But again, I haven't seen specifically the process to apply for it. My understanding is that there's a box that you check to indicate that you want the $10,000. But again, I haven't heard of anyone receiving not only the $10,000, but not a loan proceed from the EIDL either.
Okay, so now how I hear this EIDL, toss in the explanation of the PP.
So the it's actually three P's. The PPP, or the Paycheck Protection Plan loan, is a different SBA program. The PPP loan is, I equate it to a no-doc mortgage. Effectively, they are determining the amount of the loan based on your average payroll for the prior year, multiplying that by 2.5, and that's the maximum amount that you can borrow. There is no personal guarantee. There's no security interest. To the extent that you use the proceeds to pay wages, the loan will be forgiven, which means that it will go away. The intent with the PPP was, in my opinion, simply to keep people paid, not necessarily to keep them working. There's a big misunderstanding about that, I think. The idea was from Congress was to keep money in the workers' hands and let the government essentially pay their wages. The forgiveness of the PPP loan has to be applied for after 8 weeks. Let me rephrase that. When you receive the loan proceeds from the PPP, you have 8 weeks to spend the money. No more than 25% of the money should be used for non-payroll purposes. To the extent it's used for payroll.
What are those non-payroll purposes?
Rent, mortgage interest, and utilities. If you spend more than 25% on those things, that amount is not going to be forgiven. The terms of the loan are, it's a 1% loan for 2 years. So to the extent it's not forgiven, it's not the end of the world from a borrowing standpoint. The cost of that loan is not terribly expensive, but it does need to be paid back. So you get funded, you spend the money over 8 weeks, and then you can apply for forgiveness. This is where some planning and or bookkeeping is going to be essential. If you get the PPP loan and intend to have it forgiven, you really need to have a strong bookkeeping system to be able to track where dollars, how dollars are spent, and be able to document that the wages were paid. Again, regardless of whether the person is working, they just need to be paid. To keep them, the idea was to keep them off of unemployment. So a good bookkeeping system, a good plan for how the money is going to be used. But again, one of the things that I've seen recently with the PPP loan, on Saturday, a client had sent me their actual loan documents from their bank, and he said, "I don't see anything in these documents about forgiveness." And about 5 minutes later, another client sent me their package of loan documents, and theirs did have forgiveness language in there. Tom, I'm going to pause.
Okay. I'm hearing. I thought this one was a sharp idea. A business owner in our community is doing the EIDL big loan, the big package past the $10,000 in, and going to the bank. I have heard people report that banks, if a person does not have a relationship with the bank, that the bank is not taking their application, pushing them back to whoever they do business with. And there are separate companies out there who are processing. My understanding is because the banks don't get to make a whole lot of money off of these packages, so it's not exactly their first preference of things to be doing. That being said, one owner made mention about his bank in setting it up for him, saying, "We're going to set up for you a separate checking account, and that's where the money from this PPP loan is going to go, and we want you to do your payroll and your rent and your utilities to be paid out of there so that we can use these check stubs or these online payments that you're going to make. We can look at the account and realize there's your documentation to substantiate the loan." Does that make sense to you, Mike?
I've heard the same things, Tom. I'm not a big fan of opening the second account or the third account or whatever it might be. Having payroll come out of switching your payroll system to have it come out of a different account just for this purpose might be a difficult thing. As long as you have strong bookkeeping systems in place, as long as you have a payroll processor, you'll be able to prove how dollars were spent during the 8-week period. I've heard the same thing about banks not wanting to do business with people who have not had a an existing business relationship with them. And I've also heard complaints that banks are loath to do these loans because they're not making much money on them. And I'm really disgusted by it. Honestly, my opinion is that the banks have been prepaid for this issue when they got the bailout from the financial crisis in 2008. They've already been paid for their services for this. Whatever they make on this, they should give it. They should donate it, I think. Small businesses are getting crushed right now, and banks not making enough money on these loans is just not sitting well with me.
Well, we both come from the small business world, so yeah, we both are kind of in the banks. I think it's your turn to pony up on these things. Let's go back once more, Mike. You give me the dollar amount on the PPP loan. Now, on the EIDL loan, what's the top end number that can borrow, and what's the terms of that?
Tom, I think it's $10 million. It's a much higher amount, and it's a 10-year payback at 3.5% interest. But like I said, it's a full document loan. It is, you're going to have to sign a personal guarantee. You'll have to, yeah, it's a $10,000 loan. I'm sorry. Oh. That's the grant. Yeah, $10 million loan. It's a full document loan. You'll have to provide 3 years of financial statements, 3 years of personal and business tax returns. It's a much more onerous process than the PPP loan.
Okay. But now, so we can make sure we get these. I mean, I've read a lot of this stuff, and I'm thinking, because you guys, your head must be swimming with so much stuff. If a person wants to go down the path, they own their business in some particular shape, form, or fashion. If a person goes down the first DL part, if they go online, they apply for the $10,000, can they quit at that point? So if they go online and use the SBA's website and quit at the 10?
I think they have to do the whole application, but I don't know at what point they're going to ask for the documentation. The $10,000, as we both know, is supposed to be released pretty quick. But I don't know that I can fully answer that, Tom, right now.
Okay. So this is the point, folks, as we're finding, there's so many things that are to be concerned about and things that will happen. How about because we've spent the hour, we're obviously going to go over our hour here. One more alphabet soup piece, FFCRA.
The Freedom First Coronavirus Act.
Families First.
Recovery Act, yeah. Families First Coronavirus Recovery Act. There you go. That has to do with expanding the role of the Family Medical Leave Act, allowing affected employees to take off work and still get paid. And generally that applied to larger employers, more than 500 employees or more than 50 employees. They've required all employers under 500 to cover workers who may be sick, may have someone in their house that they're taking care of who's sick, or have a child who's not able to go to school or their caregiver during the work hours. And allow
basically anybody who's got kids.
Because they're all home now. It allows the employer to keep paying them, and I say allows because most small employers really couldn't afford to do this. But it allows the employer to keep paying them, but the employer then gets reimbursed by reducing the amount of taxes that are remitted to the IRS through their semi-weekly or monthly payroll tax remittance. So it appears to be coming out of the employer's pocket, it's effectively coming out of what the employer would be remitting to the IRS anyway. To the extent that the wages exceed the amount of tax withheld and the employer taxes, then the employer can file a document with the IRS to get an advance or a refund, if you will, of future taxes.
So with that one, a couple of things you're onto is that as we're all required to go under this, there is a way, as I understand it, that as a small business owner, you can apply to exempt from this. If somehow you can say to the, Department of Labor?
If you
this will bankrupt me?
Yeah, if you're, I think it's less 25 employees or less, you can apply for a waiver. If this process would make the company economically unfeasible, I think is the term they use. I haven't seen the form. I don't know exactly what that process would look like. Small employers could potentially get exempted by applying for exemption.
So the situation we have here, folks, is that...
The problem I think you're going to have, though, Tom, is the timing. I mean, the employees need the dollars now, and by the time you apply for an exemption and get word back, I don't know if those timelines are going to line up very well.
No, because it seems very messy. I mean, it's a neat concept. But the issues I'm seeing is that, one, you can get up to a 50% credit. It goes against the payroll taxes. And as Mike's saying, so what if the pay to the pay your employees is more than what you're paying out in payroll taxes? Okay, well, then you're supposed to get a refund that you can apply to the IRS. But what I read as of a week ago, the IRS still hadn't even created the form to use to apply for it.
Yeah, that's only on the employee retention credit. But they all require the employer to either keep tax money they would otherwise send to the IRS or apply to get those dollars back from the IRS. The IRS is saying that they're going to turn those requests around real quick, but as we've seen with the way this legislation has come about, nothing happens that quick.
Yeah, concept's great. Results are challenge.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're going to get it right eventually, but it's going to take money out of the employer's pockets for a period of time until they get it back from the Treasury. And hopefully the employers who are willing to pay employees knowing they're going to get the credit can hold out and get that money ultimately back from the Treasury. The amazing thing, Tom, is in the past 2 weeks, we've seen more legislation come down than at one time, significant, business-altering legislation than I've seen in 25 years of practice. And my office has spent hundreds of hours between the three professionals in the office trying to stay up to date on this stuff. And the number of changes that kept happening day to day, and certainly over the last two and a half week period, was just really a struggle to keep up with. Hopefully the new legislation that comes down isn't as taxing on the people who are advising you, but this stuff has been really a challenge.
That it has. Since we've ran over, just a couple of items I want to share of thoughts going forward, doing your marketing and things of what I'm seeing people are out there doing. Number one is that we need, as small businesses, to not be telling the public how they got to save us. I'm thinking about a men's clothing store on the East Coast that was just going straight ahead with their usual marketing, and all of a sudden everything changed. You can help us. Okay, everyone here's got enough problems as is. It's don't appeal for the guilt complexes to come and save me. Like people have a responsibility to it. If ever there was a time to use social media, this is it. But do so in a manner that you're communicating with people in a positive manner, be a cheerleader for the community, do stuff of uplifting things, support things, anything that your business can possibly do to help the community, by all means, do it. Inject a little humor. I saw a business that their unique thing was a daily YouTube video. It was kind of like the old David Letterman bit with something to the effect of things I never thought that I would say or I would do. And they made a contest out of it. Find another business that you can partner with. I say that because the business that created the video series then said, well, if we post your video as a part of ours, then what we're going to do is they found a coffee shop, and you go through the coffee shop, drive-through service, and coffee shop's got a sign in their drive-through window that says, are you playing the I Never Thought game with this particular name of business? Something to take and engage people. Where you can, do online movie nights. I know of a group in the arts industry, and they were doing museum tours on a movie night, and they took it a step further with saying, come by our business. We've got these little tiny packets of popcorn, so you can make your movie popcorn, put their label on it, and this is what time we're going to start the program. I've even seen a movie theater that's saying, well, you know, no one makes popcorn like we make popcorn. I have seen a movie theater that is doing curbside service with the concession food from their place. All right, so mind you, it doesn't make sense for them to take and sell you a Coke, because you can buy Coke in lots of places. But the popcorn and other foods that you wouldn't associate with coming from the movie theater, they were selling it by curbside service. The bear hunt, if you've been on Facebook and you see the bear hunt going around the country, what if you did something very uniquely with I'm thinking about bike shops, Mike, near and dear to our heart, and with the bike shops, they were telling customers, put a picture of your bicycle in the window, send it to us, and then as people are doing some aspects of riding in neighborhoods, you know, mind you, not all of us are locked down to where we can't go anywhere out of our house, saying, take and write down the addresses where you've seen these bicycle pictures in people's windows, and here's a prize that we give for that one. Another
like a scavenger
one.
Scavenger hunt.
Thinking about, like, it's like a scavenger hunt. Another one I've seen, if you've seen families in military who have the blue star, the banner in the windows, blue star, one star, two star, three star, naming number of their family who have been in a sorry, Army people for not remembering the terminology, been in an active, I believe, war zone to entitles you to have the blue star. A green star is considered a symbol of hope. So what if to be a cheerleader, you created a poster that people could print or come, if they can, come by your shop to pick it up, that says, post this in your window. It's the green star. I liken this one to the situation where people started putting blue lights out on their front porch to say that they were supporting the police department. Partner wherever you possibly can with people. Use your mail list. Just understand that you cannot go out there and sell things the way we can. And you're not going to bring people in the door more by discounting the merchandise you got. It's not going to move people. If you can help them to have fun, have enjoyment, inject a little humor, okay, you got something there. Where you can, walk, ride on your bike. Look at your marketing further down the line. What we're going to see people doing in months to come. We're going to see people who are more open to ways to pay. Paying by Apple Pay, Amazon Pay, Google Pay, Samsung Pay, Text Pay, and this stuff. Be ready for that one. Look at your business as to how you need to be perhaps widening aisles, making it more spacious, turning more lights on to make the business look all the bigger than you have before. Prepare for a different style of shopping going forward. You don't need to just sit outside and be doing nothing at this point. Before I tell Mike thanks, I will share with you one last story that adds a little bit of humor to it. And the story is that of a person who walked into a Target And they walked into a Target in one of the states which does not allow people to buy what's called non-essential products. Okay? So they're in the grocery store side. They're making their purchases. And when they get to the cash register, the cashier is taking the products and notices all of a sudden here is a video game in their shopping cart. And the customer says, or the cashier says, sir, I cannot sell you this video game. You know, it's not part of the essential product list there. And the customer leans as close as they can with restriction to the cashier and says, I have been home for 2 weeks now. I have 3 children. I'm trying to work from home. This video game is essential. And however the cashier did it, rang it through with a simple, I understand, sir. That being said, we have more than reached an hour of time here. We've had our special guest, Mike McCormick, with us. Reminder again, Mike's book coming out again as a new edition, but it's Entrepreneur's Guide to Forming a Small Business Entity. Our guest is Mike McCormick. Mike's website is financialclaritygroup.com. They are located in Cincinnati. His email address is mike@financialclaritygroup.com, and his office phone number is 513-488-1121. Folks, we will get through this, and we will be different, and we will be stronger because of it. And we'll be better because we expect fully that some of the big boys out there are not going to come back as plentiful as they did in the past. Business will be awesome. Hang tight, and if you have questions, by all means, you know where to reach me. And if appropriate, you know where to find Mike. Mike McCormick, thank you, sir. I appreciate you being here tonight.
Thank you, Tom. It's always a pleasure. I'm going to send you a resource that you can tag at the end of this if you want. I'll send it to you offline.
Okay, sounds good. Everybody, thanks for being with us.
It has been our pleasure to share fresh ideas and trends from premier small business owners, coaches, and resources. Join Tom Shea and guests next month right here on Small Business Conversations from Profits Plus Solutions. This is PBN, the Profitable Business Network. Visit our website to learn more about us at profitsplus.org. There you will find our catalog of small business conversations, articles and advisories, news, meeting planners, calculators, and resources. Also, we invite you to connect with Profits Plus Solutions on our various social media channels. Please like or connect with us on Facebook, LinkedIn, SlideShare, Twitter, and YouTube. We have links to all our social media channels on our homepage at profitsplus.org. Thank you for joining us.